This is God's word found in Jeremiah chapter 9, verse 23. Thus saith the Lord, let not the wise man glory in his wisdom, neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Let not the rich man glory in his riches, but let him that glorieth glory in this, that he understandeth and knoweth me, that I am the Lord, which exercise loving kindness, judgment, and righteousness in the earth. For in these things I delight, saith the Lord. I'll use these verses as a text today. And to begin, it's going to be important for us to share an understanding of one of the key words in that verse, glory. Glory used as a verb. It's pretty rare in modern English for glory to be used as a verb. So the best fitting synonym in the context of these verses would be boast. And the New Testament uses the word boast to express similar ideas in many places. We'll read some of those later on. So to understand what it is to glory, let's understand what it is to boast. Surveyed a few dictionaries to get a definition. The one I'm going to share with you is to make statements of excessive pride, especially about oneself. Informally, we might use the word brag. That's what I'd say where I grew up in South Georgia, just bragging. Excessive pride, talking too much about yourself. That's what to glory is, or to boast, when we talk about wisdom, might, or riches. The word pride in that definition, excessive pride, is the red flag. That should wave in your mind when you hear that definition, to speak with excessive pride. God's displeasure, then, is really not with the wisdom, the might, or the riches. Those things are gifts. Those are gifts from Him. It's actually the point. All those things are gifts that God gives us, and God evaluates not the fact that we have those things, but what we do with them and also how they affect our hearts. Jesus said on one occasion in Mark chapter 7, verse 15, there is nothing from without a man that entering into him can defile him, but the things which come out of him, those are they that defile the man. For from within, out of the heart of men, proceed evil thoughts, adulteries, fornications, murders, thefts, covetousness, wickedness, deceit, lasciviousness, an evil eye, blasphemy, pride, foolishness. That's a long list of bad stuff. A long list of bad stuff. And right there near the end, you saw pride. All these evil things, Jesus said, come from within and defile the man. So to play that back in terms of our verse today, it's not the things that go in the mouth that defile the body, nor the things that you hold in your hand, nor the things that you clothe your body with, nor the balance that might be in your bank account. Those things don't defile the man. It's things that proceed from the mouth, that come first from the heart, that defile the man. We might amplify that a little bit and say the things that come from the mouth, the things that animate the face, the body language, the attitude, those things are the things that defile the man. They come from the heart. And God's evaluating when He gives us gifts and we're blessed with things, natural things in this world. God's evaluation is always on the heart. How does it affect our heart? Does it turn our hearts from Him, or does it turn our hearts to Him? It's a consistent truth, a principle that will always point you towards God's will for your life. God always wants all of your heart. He wants all of your heart all of the time, and He doesn't want it given to other things. The greatest commandment, you may recall from New Testament, when Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, strength, and mind. That doesn't leave any energy for boasting. If we spend all our heart, all our soul, all our strength, and all our mind loving God, we won't have any energy left over for boasting. It's not that simple, but in principle it is. What we boast in reflects what we value. So do we value the gifts and the possession of the gifts? Do we look for our identity, our comfort, our fulfillment in the gifts that we're given? Do we confuse the gifts with the one who gave the gifts? Or do we focus on the giver as we use those blessings? When God gives us the right perspective and visits us with His Spirit and with His daily grace, we can use the gifts He gives us with joy and thanksgiving. We'll know we have it right when we're giving Him the glory instead of taking it for ourselves. Let's start by looking at the specific ways we misplace our boasting out of our text. The text begins by naming wisdom. Don't glory in wisdom. Wisdom is a good thing. We have studied Proverbs quite a bit this year on Wednesday nights. Proverbs are they're the book of wisdom. And when we read Proverbs, the Proverbs themselves encourage us, exhort us to seek wisdom, to learn wisdom, to take heed to understanding. God promises wisdom if we ask for it. He wants us to ask for it. When Solomon was presented with an opportunity and God visited him and said, "What would you have?" And he offered him wisdom and strength and long life and a glorious kingdom. And Solomon chose wisdom. God was very pleased with that. And he said, "I'm going to give you wisdom greater than any that's come before you. I'm also going to, since I'm so happy with that request, I'm also going to bless you with might and with riches." So Solomon had all the things that our text is talking about. And wisdom was a wonderful gift that Solomon used to God's glory on many occasions. And wisdom's worth pursuing. It's not enough to live on. Not enough to live on is the point. It can't be the focus of your heart, soul, strength, and mind. That should be Jesus Christ. Should be God. Listen to what Solomon, the wisest man who ever lived before Christ, listen to what he said in his later years in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, beginning with verse 15. These are the words of Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived at that time. "Then said I in my heart, as it happeneth to the fool, so it happeneth even to me. And why was I then more wise?" He's talking about death there. That's what happens to the fool, even as it happens to the king. And Solomon was very discouraged to contemplate that. Could be a king. I could be a wise man. At the end of the days, we're going to be buried. It's over. We're just gone. That's what Solomon has in mind as he thinks about his own wisdom. "Then I said in my heart that this also is vanity. This is emptiness. For there is no remembrance of the wise more than of the fool forever. Seeing that which now is in the days to come shall all be forgotten, and how dieth the wise man? As the fool." Solomon's not saying wisdom has no value. Just a few verses before the one that we read, it says, "Wisdom excelleth folly, as far as light excelleth darkness." Wisdom enriches our lives tremendously. It gives us God's perspective on the life that we're living, helps us make wise choices. It's the light to our path. And wisdom should be sought after to make those better choices and to honor God. But what Solomon is saying here is he's offering the rationale for our text. He's saying wisdom and might and riches are temporal. They pass. And because of that and because of the shortness of our lives, we should consider them with the right perspective. Against the timeline of this earth, the span of our lives is just a speck. It's just a dot. And all the wisdom and all the might and all the riches we have for all of our lives long, from God's point of view, can barely be seen on that timeline. So bear that in mind. You might want to quarrel with me here. You might say, we're actually reading Solomon's words thousands of years later. They were preserved. Doesn't that prove the point against Solomon that, hey, we've got his words of wisdom here. We're reading them. He's got three books in the Bible. He's got Proverbs, Ecclesiastes, Song of Solomon. Those were preserved through thousands of years. And we get to read Solomon's wisdom. So isn't he wrong in what he's saying there? Doesn't this message this morning disprove his point as we talk about Solomon's wisdom? The answer to that is, you could read the books that Solomon wrote and that we still have in the course of an afternoon. You could go home this afternoon and do that in a few hours, and many of you have probably already read them many times over. So are any of you as wise as Solomon at this point? Well, it's given that we're not supposed to be boasting of wisdom, I wasn't expecting any hands. That's good. You're getting it. You're getting it. But the truth is, the wisdom of Solomon essentially passed with Solomon. We have some relics of his wisdom. We have some proof of his wisdom. But his wisdom passed. It did. It's gone with him. And it's sad when you think about it. Solomon did, and he knew, actually, because God told him, I'm going to give you more wisdom than anyone has ever had. And so Solomon knew that. And as he contemplated his gift, he said, this is vanity, this is emptiness, and it vexes my spirit. It grieves me to realize that I'm going to die just like the fool, and this gift that God has given me is going to pass. And it was true. And wow, I don't know what. Just imagine being the wisest man on earth and realizing that when I'm dead, it's just gone. And that's where Solomon was as he wrote Ecclesiastes. The whole book is talking about this life we live. It's this big circle, a lot of cycles. If you read Ecclesiastes, he's talking about the times and the seasons of life, and he talks about how water starts in the clouds and rains down into the streams and goes into the oceans and evaporates again to the clouds, and it's just wearying to him now that he knows this. He's like, I've got this wisdom. I understand how that works, and I've written it down so you get it too. But wow, I mean, when I'm gone, there's so much that's going to be gone with me, so much that's going to be departed. And the essence of, he knew that his amazing gift would die with him. He's preserved his words, so you can get the essence or the proof of some of his wisdom. But I'll tell you, the fact that we're studying his words today does not mean that his wisdom survives or that his words are given greater weight by everyone than the words of any fool. You want proof of that? Just go to any bookstore, and you could actually go to humanities departments at colleges around the country, and you can pay for the privilege of hearing the words of fools. I've done it. And it may be, I don't know, I haven't studied this out, but it may be that people spend more energy in this world studying the words of fools than they do studying the words of Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived. And that's sad. And I think that's the sorrow that Solomon had in his mind, in his heart, as he wrote Ecclesiastes. I know these words, God is preserving these words, and I'm wanting you to read these words and understand it's sad. And wisdom itself is nothing to boast of. It's going to be gone when you're gone. And that won't be very long. Isn't that discouraging? Thank you. Let's have a closing hymn now. Let's find something encouraging. Solomon wound up Ecclesiastes by encouraging us that we should spend our days, whether they were few or many, glorifying God. He is actually the author of the cycle. He's the one in charge. He's in charge. He was in charge then. He's in charge now. He will be in charge forever. He gave us the gift of wisdom. He gave Solomon the gift of wisdom. Let's worship him now while we're young, when it's easy, and for the rest of our lives. That's the point of it. Don't get focused on the wisdom he's given. That'll be gone. But focus on the giver of the gift. Witness James chapter 1, verse 17. Every good gift and every perfect gift is from above and cometh down from the Father of lights, with whom is no variableness, neither shadow of turning. So I think we've established pretty well we shouldn't boast in wisdom because of its fleeting nature and because it's God who gave us the wisdom and deserves the praise. So if I've heard that and I'm willing to commit myself to not boasting of wisdom, what does that look like? How does boasting in wisdom show up in daily life? How can I recognize it? How can I avoid it? Well, sometimes it is like one of my favorite scenes in The Princess Bride, the battle of wits between Vizzini and the man in black, the mysterious man in black who challenges Vizzini to a battle of wits to the death for the possession of the princess who's been kidnapped. Vizzini explicitly boasted in his wisdom. "You're no match for my brain," said Vizzini. "You've heard of Plato, Aristotle, Socrates? Morons. Morons," he said. Subsequently, he lost the battle of wits and died, so point was proven in itself. We should be able to clearly see and avoid the sort of boasting of wisdom like we saw Vizzini do. But that's not really how boasting and wisdom usually shows up in our lives. More often, it's not explicit. We don't use the words, how smart we are, but we might act that way. We might just live that way. We might not call our elders and our counselors morons. We might just smile and patronize them and disregard their advice. Done that. Maybe we would speak with intellectual certainty where intellectual humility would be more appropriate. Done that. Maybe we would compete, look for the chance to demonstrate our superiority, seek to appear the smartest in the room. Maybe we would be unwilling just to say, "I don't know the answer to that." Those are just the boastings and wisdom that I have personal experience with, and you might be able to add to the list. We just live that way. We forget. It's just a gift, and it might not have as much wisdom as we think. It's a specific form of pride, the original sin, but it's subtle, pride is. It takes many forms. I believe that every form of pride takes a different tactic to defeat, a different variation on self-awareness and humility. So what's the antidote for boasting in wisdom? Well, that might be a personal decision or a personal something that works for you, but something that has worked for me is to adopt the identity of a learner or a student in life, remain a student all my life long, to tell myself every day I'm learning new things, and if I'm not, then I'm not progressing. In managing people, we sometimes literally have had the discussion about an individual with 20 years of experience that was actually 1 year of experience 20 times over. To think about that. 20 years of experience is very valuable, but 1 year of experience 20 times over is not valuable at all. It's very frustrating. Very frustrating to work with. And the difference between 20 years of experience and 1 year times 20 is the attitude of the learner, and it's the willingness to learn and to know that there is more than I know. As I've gotten older, it actually amazes me how many things I once knew that I now no longer know. I don't know if anybody has that experience. One of our modern poets put it this way: "I knew much more then than I do now." And the application of this life experience is simple. If I knew much more then than I do now, maybe today I know less than I think. And that's a good perspective to have. If you keep that perspective, it is hard to boast of wisdom. Listen to what James says in chapter 3, verse 13. "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you? Let him show out of a good conversation his works with meekness of wisdom. But if you have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. This wisdom descends not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. But the wisdom that is from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, and easy to be entreated, full of mercy and good fruits, without partiality and without hypocrisy. And the fruit of righteousness is sown in peace of them that make peace." James is just saying that if you understand the source of the wisdom you have and what a speck it is on the timeline of God's universe and how great God is and how needy we are of His daily mercy, that perspective tends to take the fire out of arguments. It tends to take the bite out of criticisms that you might offer your neighbor. It tends to take the sting out of correction and admonition that you might give, even to your own children. It tends to build relationships and not tear them down, and it unites rather than dividing. And that, I believe, is the reason we're not to boast in wisdom. Let's consider now glorying not in might. Neither let the mighty man glory in his might. Much like boasting in wisdom, boasting in might shows up in a spectrum of behaviors. Let's start at one end with the greatest heavyweight boxer of all time, Muhammad Ali. He was well known for outrageous boasts of his might. He made trash talking an art form. And trash talking means bragging, basically. So he would do that before and during and after fights all the time. One of his quotes is, "I'm young, I'm handsome, I'm fast, I can't possibly be beat." He would infuriate his opponents and get them off balance, and actually that gave him an edge going into fights. And they would be so angry at him they couldn't see straight. And he would dance around and knock them out within three or four rounds in his earlier career. It's easy to see and understand boasting of might in that form. It's also easy to see if you look ahead in your life just a little bit, even if you haven't gotten to this point in time where things begin to fade, they will. Might is fleeting, just like wisdom, and perhaps even more so. It's based in physical ability. Muhammad Ali's boast was, "I'm young, I'm handsome, I'm fast, I can't possibly be beat." Those things change with time. Natural strength fades. Muhammad Ali may have, in fact, been the greatest heavyweight boxer of all time that ever was. We can debate that, but there's no debating that he's not the greatest boxer now. No disrespect to Muhammad Ali, but he passed a couple of years ago. In 1996, I was blessed to be at the opening ceremonies of the Olympic Games. Maybe I was just at the practice. I'm not sure he did this at the practice. I think that was a secret they revealed only on the night of the opening ceremonies, so I had to see it on TV. But many of you were witnesses to that as well, that Muhammad Ali actually lit the torch that started the 96 Olympic Games in Atlanta. And he did that. He was already fighting Parkinson's disease at the time. He had a shaking hand, and it was tough to watch. He had a hard time steadying the torch as he lit the cauldron that started the games. And time will do that, even if disease doesn't. Time will do that to all of us. It'll take away the strength that we would boast in. It will happen. Muhammad Ali was also reported to have argued with a flight attendant who told him to buckle his seatbelt on one occasion. "Superman don't need no seatbelt," he told her. And she replied, "Superman don't need no plane." So, speaking of Superman, let's talk a little more about superheroes. If anyone could boast in might, it would be those guys. I'm a fan of the Marvel movies. I love superheroes. I've loved them since I was young. Many of us, I think, do. We get to look at superheroes and the might that they display, and they're invincible. They're amazing. If anybody could boast in their might, it would be those superheroes. Love their backstories, the legends that explain how they got their powers or discovered their powers. I don't like the ones that were just born with it. That doesn't give me a lot of hope. I really prefer the ones that were bitten by a spider or had an industrial accident and something good came out of it. Or maybe they were just good with inventions, like Batman. I mean, what a guy. He just had a good core strength workout and some cool inventions and a few million dollars and a butler. But other than that, could be me. So that's what I like about superheroes is, that could be me. And when I was young, especially, I spent hours just imagining what I would do with superpowers. And sometimes they felt so real. I remember climbing up dangerously high and encouraging myself to jump, really believing that I might fly or at least float just a little bit. I did carry an umbrella with me as safety insurance. But it really just hurt my ankles pretty badly when I did that. And you would think that after one time of that, I would quit. But I really never, as a child, gave up on looking for that hidden superpower I must possess. I just really was convinced that I had that. And the Bible is a very practical book. So when it tells us not to boast of our might, I really don't think it's addressing superpowers. But if you have them, don't boast of them, because no one likes a boastful superhero. It's just tacky. I want to hear about it. But I think it's just like with wisdom, there is a more subtle form of boasting and might that we can fall prey to. Most of us, in fact, will yield to at some point. We might not talk about our strength and our power. It just shows up in the choices we make, the attitudes we hold, and maybe in the strengths that we think we have. Jesus asked in Matthew, "Which of you, by taking thought, can add one cubit unto his stature?" That is, can you think yourself taller? Maybe could you worry yourself a little taller? He's making a point. Well, no, you can't. You can't do that. Some things are beyond our power. As a child, that tendency I had to believe in my own latent superpowers is still with me. I just don't look to fly. I'm not expecting X-ray vision. But maybe I believe I can leap to the top of a successful career in a single bound, just on my own strength. Well, the truth is, your career is determined by other people, by bosses, by customers, donors, what have you. It's really not within your power to succeed. So keep that in mind. It might be good to pray about that. It might be good to remember your might is limited. Maybe we live our lives striving to make others think like we want them to, like Professor Xavier, one of the X-Men. He had that ability. People had to put on tinfoil hats around him to keep him out of their heads, because otherwise he'd just make you think whatever he wanted to, do whatever. And we sometimes act like we can do that with those we love, those we really want to change their behavior and influence. We act like we have that superpower. We don't. It's not really in our control to influence the thoughts and the actions of people we love. That's in God's purview. You might imagine yourself as a new superhero that's not yet been glorified in the comic books. Maybe Worry Woman. She's able to worry her children safer while they travel. Any writing hands? Yeah. That's not going to happen. God can protect those children. Use that energy to pray to Him. Maybe you're wanting to be Invincible, immune from the pain that's caused by name-calling and bullying at school. Well, that's not realistic. Names hurt. Words have such an impact. But Jesus knows your pain, and He calls you by a name that's uniquely yours. It's a name that He's going to use in heaven. It's a name that reflects the very special love He has for you and the way that He created you. Focus on finding the gifts that He's given you and use them to His glory. Confess the pain to Him, and He'll help you bear it. But no one's invincible. No one has that superpower. What superpower do you still imagine yourself to possess? And when will you get to that place of admitting you don't have it, and you depend on the One who does? I want to put my trust in the One who turned water into wine and who healed the sick and who raised the dead. Those are superpowers, legit. And all those superheroes that we read about in the comic books, they're just projections of the need we have for Jesus Christ, the One who's bigger than the things that are beyond our control. Our most fervent beliefs in our own abilities are misplaced. But when we believe in His abilities, we're never disappointed. Hebrews 17, verse 5, "Thus saith the Lord, cursed be the man that trusteth in man, and maketh flesh his arm, and whose heart departeth from the Lord. Blessed is the man that trusteth in the Lord, and whose hope the Lord is." Glory not in strength. Glory not in riches. Job says, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither." If you remember the context of him saying that, he had just lost everything, naturally speaking. His houses, his flocks, all of his wealth, even his children. His wife had abandoned him. And he said, "Naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord." And Job is right. We need to hold the things we have with a loose grip. They came from God, and one day they'll go back to Him. And let's not confuse the immediate source of our blessings with the one who provided them. God works through our parents to feed us and clothe us, and later He works through our employers, our customers, our donors to feed us and clothe us. It's true always, all of our lives, that we're dependent. Maybe you live off the grid. Maybe you grow your own food. How does that work out for you when the sun doesn't shine and the rain doesn't fall? We're dependent. We're dependent. One of the signs that we've begun boasting in gifts is that we can't get enough of them. We begin to collect them, to seek them out, to pursue them with all our might. And then when we get those gifts, those things that we're after, turns out we're not satisfied with them. Just want more. Want the next thing. It's a good sign that we've become boastful in riches. There is a modern musical, one that Tori loves, and I hear this song a great deal at home. And in that song, there's a verse, "Towers of gold would be too little. These hands could hold the world, but it'll never be enough." Never be enough. That's the song of someone who's become captivated by riches, by the things of the world. Psalm 49 treats that topic at length. "They that trust in their wealth and boast themselves in the multitude of their riches." It talks of those in verse 17, and it says, "For when he dies, he'll carry nothing away. His glory shall not descend after him." The Egyptians tried to bury it with the Pharaohs. Well, they did. But it didn't benefit the Pharaohs. It benefited later-day grave diggers, some museums, Indiana Jones types. But the Pharaohs, not so much. No benefit to them. They didn't have any more use of it. All the things that we'll manage to collect in this world, they'll depart from us when we depart this life. But like a lot of other boastings, this one can surprise you and sneak up on you. You don't have to be in the top 1% to trust in riches instead of God. It's relatively all inconsequential. His are the cattle of 1,000 hills. And whether your bank balance is near zero or you think it's great stuff, it's pretty small in the grand scheme from God's perspective. And that's why we boast in Jesus Christ. I'm going to close out by emphasizing what we should boast in. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 17, "But he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord." And 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 30, if I must needs glory, I will glory of the things which concern mine infirmities." Paul here is writing and he's saying, "I'm going to glory of the things that concern mine infirmities." What he's saying is, "I'm going to glory when I recognize where my strengths, where my abilities ended in a certain circumstance, and where God took over. I'm going to look for those occasions, and I'm going to use them to glorify God." And the one specific case he was speaking of, if you read that passage in 2 Corinthians chapter 11, he was in a city. He'd gotten in trouble for starting to preach the gospel of Jesus Christ, and he was being hunted by men who wanted to take his life, and he was trapped. He couldn't get out of the gates of the city. And he recognized at that moment he was in a tight spot. And he escaped by being let down out of a window in the wall in a basket. When he was at the end of the rope, God gave him rope in the hands of that woman who owned that house and let him down out of that window in that basket. And he said, I'll admit to you that all of my lineage, my training, my Jewish ancestry and abilities, All of that wasn't going to save me. My strength wasn't going to save me. I'm not an eloquent speaker, so you might not look at me, he said, and be amazed at what an orator I am. Where my abilities end, let God be glorified. It's like, I'm going to tell you straight up, I just don't have what it takes. That's a great attitude to have. Just like that, not boasting in wisdom. I don't know it all. I'm learning. But I know that where I fall short, God can pick it up. In fact, everything I've been able to do to this point, with the breath I have in my body, I was able to do because God blessed me. So why should it be any surprise that when I'm run out of whatever strength I've got, God takes it from there? He brought it to this point already. Did I think I got it here? No. When I have the right perspective, I understand. Everything that's been done, all the success so far, to His glory, is through me. And then whatever happens else must be through Him, through others. But to God be the glory in any case. That's what Paul is saying in 2 Corinthians. And like Paul, we depend on God and His agency in our lives through others. We need the prayers of those we love. We need the fellowship of the saints and communion at our local church. We need it every week. I need it every week. Twice a week's great. We need to offer up our own prayers. We need to be in God's Word daily. We need those things. Our list of needs is great. God can satisfy all of those. And that is what we boast in. In closing, I want us to turn to a hymn and read a verse. We'll sing it later, but turn to, in the smaller hymnal, Songs of Zion, turn to hymn number 10. How deep the Father's love. Verse 3 captures really the essence of this, of what Scripture has been saying, as I've highlighted it today. I will not boast in anything, no gifts, no power, no wisdom, but I will boast in Jesus Christ, His death and resurrection. The death and resurrection of Christ showcase His wisdom, His power, His might, His riches, His identity as the giver of all gifts. I want to be proud of my association with Jesus Christ. I want to boast in Him. I want to bear His name. I want to be known as one who follows Him. I want to trust Him when I'm faced with the limits of my own gifts and power and wisdom.